Roger Waters, a leader, a bass player. And
how you doing,
at the moment.
Do you want to join us? Or,
He's just
not working out yet.
I'll think about that.
Okay. He's here. Yeah. Okay. How did you get the name Pink Floyd? No.
I have to do this, I'm sorry.
Well, we refused to answer that question.
We went through a very, very big scene yesterday with another interviewer who wanted to know how we got our name. And we refused to tell her as well.
And we're not going to tell
it's
you.
It's not interesting.
It's boring.
It's very boring.
I mean, the story itself is boring, and the idea of telling you the story is so boring that
I
could well fall asleep.
I was saying to you that all interviewers ask the same questions.
Right.
That was the question.
Exactly what I meant.
Yeah, but I'm getting into more deeper questions as to this.
Right.
Well,
that's fine.
That's fine.
I mean, you're entitled to ask all these questions.
But if you really want to find out.
Sure. All right, if you don't want to answer them, then just don't
answer
them. Well, we refuse to answer that one on the
grounds. Because on the
grounds, incredibly boring.
Once you know, you won't put it in anyway.
Right.
And it's so boring. You won't say how we got it.
All right. How about Umaguma?
That's boring too?
No, that's not too bad. Actually, not many people have asked us that one.
All right, how about you get the name?
Cambridge Expression for Fuck.
Cambridge Expression for Fuck?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, although they don't know... Oh, can I see that?
Ah, oh, very interesting. Wait a minute.
Let me... Hello, it says rock and classical go together like oil and water.
Oh, yeah.
Quite so offensive.
Can you tell me about your instruments got stolen on the last tour?
Yes. Did he explain about Umaguma?
Yes, he explained about Umaguma.
Good. We were in New Orleans and someone had been, apparently, we later found out, driving our truck around. And someone took away our whole truck in a fit of pique, and with everything inside it. And so we rushed off to the police, who could have shown, I mean, were just not interested, of course. And then we were staying at this very smart hotel called the Royal Orleans in New Orleans. And with very nice young staff, and they all started saying, oh, well, my dad's the sheriff, or I know someone in the FBI or something, and this really groovy FBI geezer turned up, and really, you know, the whole thing changed immediately. There was some air of urgency about it, and we also put out on the radio and TV, you know, what had happened, and there was a reward and things, and like about 9 hours later, they found the truck dumped, and only three guitars missing.
That's all?
That's all.
Oh.
It was the most...
Just a goose, a scare-like?
I think they got scared off, yeah. Cause
Rolling Stone said $45,000 worth of equipment was stolen.
Did they tell also?
What, they had stuff
that
was stolen?
Yeah, because they... At Central Park, they were
playing, and they said something about, don't mind if our sound isn't loud. Our equipment was stolen.
Yes, what's next?
Oh, another interesting question. When did the group get together? You don't have to answer.
Well, about 6.5 years ago.
6.5 years?
Yes. We met as students.
We met as students, and that was how we met.
Right. Let me see.
Architect.
Yes. Okay, now we'll ask Roger one. You don't mind, Roger? Oh, let me see. Why did Sid Barrett leave the group?
He went mad.
He went mad?
Mm.
Do you think anyone else in the group is going to go mad?
I suppose it is.
Do I think what?
Do you think anyone else in the group's going to go in there?
Good one. Very good one.
No, I don't. Oh, thank you. How would you characterize your music in your own terms? Because it's hard to classify, you know, your type of music, you know.
I wouldn't
I wouldn't.
You would.
But if you would, what would you say it's close to?
I wouldn't classify it at all.
Okay. I'll get to better ones, don't
worry. It's all right. I mean, you're quite entitled to ask them, as I say, various questions that might be entitled freak-out questions. And one is, how did you get your name? And the other is, how would you describe your music?
Okay.
But I'm just giving you some insight into...
There are some others.
Yes, there are others, but those two are probably the corkers. I expect you can have a look at your questions.
What are your individual backgrounds in music before you got together as a group? You know, like, how did you get started playing drums?
Okay, say upper class for me and middle class for the others. But our backgrounds in music could be described as sparse, with the exception of Richard Wright, who underwent a certain amount of training. But my musical background prior to the Pink Floyd could be described as sparse. I did have some violin lessons for a period of some weeks from a woman called Mrs. Tchaikovsky, but I don't think they've made a big impact on my approach to the drums.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me, like, some of your, you know, favorite groups, like?
I'm afraid I couldn't do that because I'm not sure anymore who my favourite groups are, because they change all the time, you know. I mean, that's every now and then there's an album that comes out, and I think, what a gaff.
Right. Could you tell me, like, do you ever, like, sit around and listen to your own music, like, you know? You never do?
Really? The thing is, there's such a constant outpouring of music all the time. I mean, it's being churned out by classical rock musicians, concerts, records, all the time. And in any given time sequence, there's good stuff coming out, which you dig. And to stop the clock and say, this is what I like, it is very dangerous, you know, because...
You wouldn't sit here listening to your own music just like, you know...
No,
put
on. Definitely not.
What's the reason for it? Next.
When do you like most to go on my whistle and go to build this and stuff?
New York University, 40 East 7th Street.
New York University. 40 what?
40.
40.
East. 7th.
7th. And then we're going to be
Dom Cirillo.
Dom Cirillo.
Who's got a smaller staff. And John Riley, who wears glasses.
And John Riley. In the microphone.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Okay. What do you think about the emphasis on drugs today?
I think it's time to ask it.
What do I think about?
What do you all think about you?
I was here before.
No,
it's my turn.
No, I've heard it before, Richard.
No, you didn't.
I
gave it to you.
You did.
Right.
Somehow you managed to get it off Dave was going to be for me. Spirited away to an emergency of some kind.
Yeah?
So this is incredibly interesting. Anyway,
you see that thing?
Okay. Steve coming in and said, I need Dave urgently now. And Dave shut out. And then came
a
short
while later.
Oh,
what
is this? Anyway, some drugs. Bad.
Bad?
Mm.
You think they're all bad?
No.
I think of one.
Yes. It depends on your head, and it depends on how much you smoke and why you smoke.
Yeah? Like, I guess you do that. What would be your reason for it?
What?
What's your reason for it if you do?
If I do smoke?
Yeah, if you do. You don't have to say yes or no.
Well, I don't. My reasons for smoking are not so I can play better music, or I can write better music, or
generally believe that I'm getting things together. But I'm... No, there's a lot of people, especially, I think, and, well, not everywhere, that believe that drugs is the kind of culture. And you somehow, you know, fulfill their life or whatever, and that's bad.
How do you think about people singing music like somebody saying, you know, Pink Floyd or like a really heavy underground group, but you have to see them when you're stoned or something? How do you think, you know, it's like bullshit, but how do you think, you know, audiences feel like when they're stoned and, you know, like they see you and, you know?
That's rubbish. That you need to be stoned to see us or anybody else.
How did you get to do the score of the movie More in Zabriskie Point?
How did we get to, they came and asked us to do it?
Right, because a lot of people might relate your music to the movie More, and you know, it was all about drugs and things like that. They ask, why did you do the soundtrack and not another group, like, let's say, someone else, you know?
Well, we did it because he wanted us, Barbe Schroeder wanted us to use us. You know.
Right.
We didn't do it because it was about drugs. We in fact said good things about drugs, anyway, and we said the right things.
Right.
I'm sure if it was saying the wrong things about drugs, you wouldn't have done it.
Right.
I know you would have.
But can you tell me, like, how is it, like, a life of a rock star? Is it boring or hard or what? Like,
what?
No.
You know, life of a rock musician, like.
It's very bad in working for a living.
It is?
Yeah.
Boring or it's hard or, like...
Sometimes boring, sometimes very hard.
But it's all, I mean, it all feels worth, you know, worthwhile, and it's all. I mean, the results and the whole sense of what you're doing. You know, you're creating something that you find worthwhile, right, which is more than can be said for 85% of people working today. I mean, however much other people might despise what you do.
To me, it seems like the fantastic way to make
it. It is. It's incredible.
Yes.
Absolutely amazing.
What do you think about, like, how recording engineers work? Do you think theirs is a good job?
Recording engineers, slightly less... probably almost the same, but not quite, because they're not quite so personally involved. And, I mean, they work incredibly hard. I mean, unbelievably hard, because an album for us is, you know, a great achievement for that moment, and that album. But the moment we've done that and the engineer's done it with us, he's starting another one, you know, like that night. And so on.
He's also working on maybe more than one at the same time.
It's a special skill, and you know, it's very useful. I mean, it depends how much work they're doing. Some engineers are literally button pushers, while producers, you know, particularly with a new breed of producer, who the ones that really control the bands that they produce, you know, and do the mixing sessions without any help or advice from the group. Yeah, obviously there's a difference in the amount they do.
That's what I'm going to be, I think.
What do you want to be?
Yeah. It's a nice job.
It's a nice job if you want to be stuck in a airless building for about 20 hours a day.
20 hours a day?
Yeah. I mean, they work very, very hard. I mean,
couldn't do it.
No,
it couldn't take working in that kind of
volume.
I just never see any daylight or anything. So.
Yeah, but sometimes you get good assignments like Eddie Kramer, like he did Woodstock, and he does live albums like The Mail and everything.
Once a year. Forget the idea of on location if you're going to be an engineer. Generally, most of it is in the studios, and most of it is
hard work.
Because you have to concentrate much harder than most of the other people, because once you set up the sound, you're still balancing.
What did you think of Woodstock in there? Did you see the movie or go there?
I'd like the movie. Yeah.
Would you like to have been there? Playing, you know?
Don't know.
Well, would you?
Yeah?
I would like to have been there.
Take your picture.
What else do I have?
How did you get the idea for A Time of Heart Mother?
Atom Heart Mother came from a newspaper. Do you mean the idea of the title, or do you mean
the idea of the music?
Just through rehearsing, we built up this piece.
You all had a part to do in it, like you each contributed.
Yeah. Right? We got together and created it. And then later on we added brass.
Did you know at the start that you wanted brass or a chorus?
Not the beginning, no. The very beginning.
Do you think when you did it at the Fillmore on Sunday it came off well? Do you think the audience appreciated it or?
I think they did. Yeah.
Did you? Yeah, from the general view that I sort of the audience, they liked it. They didn't expect you to do it.
No.
I wanted you to do Interstellar Overdrive for an encore again. That's what everybody wanted. It was more, you know. Because you did it good when I saw it last time.
After that piece, see, I mean, we just couldn't go on and do another number. For us, it would have been a big bring down. I mean, after you built it up. That kind of ending to do encore in a drag.
What about experimenting with new sounds? Like I think you're the first group to use quadratic sound in four channel stereo in an audience thing, you know, and it really sounded great, and you get really great effects, you know. David gets good effects with his guitar, and you get good effects with your organ, and you get footsteps and everything. How do you feel about these effects and the reactions to them?
How do you feel, Nick?
What?
I like them. You wouldn't do them. Again, it hasn't been developed to its fullest possible extent yet.
Right.
I'm still just learning and trying things.
How about the difference in popularity between England and here? You know, how about your tours? Are they coming off well since Uma Guma came out, you know?
Tours in America, yeah. But the last one was very good. This one we don't know yet. We've only done two shows.
I was reading somewhere that a guy thought that the first album, the English version, was much better than the American version, and he's joking that he thinks that it's done by LA musicians, the first American album, you know, that you did, the first Pink Floyd, you know.
He thought what?
He thought that LA musicians did it, and that he thought that the English version was better.
Well, it's exactly sort of material, but it's been, like, the American version, they took off about three numbers, I believe, and stuck on our single. Which was the Emily play. They swapped it about. It is worse. I mean, the English version is how we wanted it to be. And the record company at the time changed it without our permission. Sure, it isn't as good. But it's not different musicians. They never did that.
Well, what are you being a pig about this for anyway? How did you like the New York Philharmonic and Leonard Bernstein when you saw him? Why did you go see him, and, you know, like, what did you think of him?
Came to our concert, and I guess we hope that one day we'll be able to do something with him, you know. And I really love Leonard Bernstein, anyway. Yeah, you know, I think he's incredible person, and he does incredible things with music and with musicians. I just wanted to see him work.
Right. Let me see. What do you think about this country? You know, like in England, they have problems, but like here, you know, there's we have Spiro Agnew, and you know, there's talk about revolution and all this. How do you feel about the politics and its affecting music? Because, like, you know, like places like the Fillmore in Westchester, and you know, these people didn't have money, and you know, like because of the politics, people thought that they were exploiting, you know, being exploited, and they wanted to go in festivals for free, and you know.
Well, that's, there's that feeling in Europe as well, especially in France, not so much in England actually. But just politics over here, I mean, it's much easier in England to live and do whatever you want without the establishment, you know, getting in your way, if you like. So it's a different situation over there. So in fact, English rock groups aren't so politically active as they are here, I guess.
Yeah. What do you feel, Nick?
What was the question?
Politics
about politics and like Spiro Agnew's English
schmuck idiot.
Well, I haven't heard exactly what Spiro Agnew said, but I mean,
what has he said now then?
Well, he said something. I know he said something about rock music is involved in drugs. I mean, you know, it's probably. Well, anyway, whatever, it hardly matters, really.
In England,
if we had someone like that, I think, in England, you'd laugh at him.
That's what they do here.
Yeah, they take him very seriously as well. Yeah. You know, they get very uptight about him.
Yeah, right, but a lot of people laugh at him, too. You know, because he's...
Well, anyway, he wouldn't be, you know...
He
wouldn't exist in England. Enoch Powell's probably the nearest thing we've got to him.
Yeah, Enoch Powell, who's considered a complete freak. I mean, really. And I mean, he does have a minority sort of group behind him. But he's considered as pretty nearly mad. And I mean, he's much more, he's not as stupid as Spiro Agnew, you know.
No, he's very intelligent.
He's pretty bright, so he's pretty clever, but he's still a complete, you know, joke, really. But Spiro Agnew isn't, unfortunately isn't. You know, he represents a large part of the American people who feel that they've missed out on all this, you know, all the new deals and so on. And, I mean, you can't move backwards. The human race doesn't move backwards, so there's obviously going to be a lot of more unpleasantness and general darkness.
It's very different here. If I was an American living in this country now, and being brought up in America, I guess I'd be, you know, feeling for revolution, etc., etc., just like a lot of young people are over here.
I mean, America is very frightening. I mean, like, I get pretty alarmed at the prospect of coming over to do tours here and so on. I mean, the whole thing, from the incredible quantities of violence, you know, and the attitude of people is frequently just amazing. You know, people who shout and scream and drivers and the whole thing. It's really extraordinary. Do you think with all these power things going on between countries that the world's going to last much longer?
Oh, that's
impossible.
And that's an impossible answer.
Well, you've got to believe it is.
You have to believe it is.
Otherwise, you give up now, and you certainly don't bother going around playing rock music.
Possibly, you know, there's a feeling going around amongst people like ourselves. We'll have an influence on how the world is managed in the future. Because it's got to be, because, you know, we're going to be the people, not necessarily in power, but I mean, it seems to me there's a lot of hope.
Right. What are the group's plans for the future, you know, like on the next tour with other albums? You know, just, are you going to go on experimenting with sound, or, you know, like, doing things, you know, like space songs, like Astronomy Diamond? Are you just going to, you know?
In terms of music, I don't know what we're going to do. But, I mean, we've got a lot of things to do right up to probably next summer. We're doing ballet, we're doing new album.
You're doing the ballet? Well, when's this?
In Paris. I've been asked to write a score for a 40-minute ballet.
What do you feel about this change? The group's been doing, you know, heavy type of rock music with, you know, sound effect type things. And what is your feeling, you know, with classical music now and ballets and orchestras getting into the group now?
We weren't necessarily using orchestra. I mean, the orchestra was an experiment, and I've no doubt, you know, I'm sure we'll do something again with an orchestra, and this will go down, you know, as an experiment, and we'll relate to it in future things. But I don't think we're now committed to a course of action using an orchestra for all our future work or our future work over the next months. In fact, I think probably and this is a sort of complete surmise, it's not a plan that we've got, but I suspect that we'll retreat from an orchestra now and go back and find out more about what the orchestra proved that we could do, you know, what we lost with an orchestra. We'll try and recapture between the four of us again, that sort of thing. You know, because obviously when you take on extra musicians and so on, you lose a certain mobility within, you know, within what you can do. And I think that we might go back and look for some of that. But then again, you know, after we've done that, we might go and try and have another go with an orchestra. Or we might... But yeah, it's difficult to say, but I'm just saying it's not, you know, it's not a sort of cut and dry thing of staying with an orchestra now.
Any of you want?
Yeah, I'll take some of that.
Should I ask this one?
American Grass.
What?
Did you
get
the wine?
Did I?
Yeah.
What do you think? Hi, Mommy.
What do you think of American Grass? Like, is it good? Or is it worse? Like, again, England, when they got from Middle East, they shut it off as one.
Yeah. Don't really want to talk about drugs.
Yeah.
And it's a bore to read about drugs and articles. But I mean, I think American Grass is very nice.
Yeah,
some of it.
It's not some Mexico and fall around, you know. It's like, come see someone just look pretty beat. So I'll give it an answer to that question.
What is the theme behind some of your songs, like in Astronomy, Dominique, for instance? You know, it's really hard to decipher the words, you know. You're on stage, and what's it about? It's about planets or what, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's science fiction, cosmic, something like.
What are some of the words to
song, anyway, so.
Like, what are some of the words to this song? Like, how
it's a fantasy, I mean,
it's a fantasy, yeah. Lime and limpid green, a second scene, a fight between the blue once here. I mean, it's
patterns of words.
It's a very,
you know,
typical
Sid Barrett
song.
It doesn't have a meaning or a story.
It's imagery, you know. Yeah. Words create images in your mind.
But
how long does the group have to, like, really practice on, like, before a show or something? How many hours?
Well, we don't practice very much. I mean,
a whole day probably set up.
That's it?
I mean, the old material you completely haven't played it for a couple of weeks or days.
No, some of the things we've been playing for 2 years.
Yeah, right.
So there's no problem. The other things, as long as we know all we have to practice, all we have to know is the basic structure of the piece. How long it, you know, whether there's a chorus after a verse or a set, you know, decide the sort of way we're going to do it, and then it's up to us to play it. You know, to the audience, which is not a matter of rehearsal.
Right. Like, how long does it, like, take? Let's say you have to, you just write a song just to get it together, like Interstellar Overdrive or something like that.
As the next thing. But, I mean, Interstellar Overdrive was written one day and performed the next.
Really?
Sometimes we would learn songs on stage at Paris Gardens, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, right in the beginning, we didn't rehearse that. We just went on stage.
We rehearsed, but we didn't rehearse numbers, we just played.
We just played. In fact, if you like, we were jamming at that point.
Yeah.
Because we went on stage not knowing what we were going to do.
And someone would
start
a piece with an idea, like it might be a...
Like, you might not come in at the same time, like, you'll go...
I mean, or someone starts and you all come in when you sussed it out. That was the usual way. How our top gauge started, just one geezer went up the microphone and went and everyone picked up on it and put the other things in it, and then the drums picked up, and then people, you know, I mean, that was more or less it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Interstellar, Sid played the theme, right? Once through, we heard it, came in, very, you know, it's very simple, and then that was it. It just went on from there.
Yeah.
What about Careful with That Axe, Eugene? What's the thing behind that besides, like,
say,
murder?
What's the theme?
Like Roger said on stage, this is a song about murder.
No, that's the title about murder.
Possibly it's the title about murder, and I mean, like,
it's a very frantic piece in some ways.
It's the no-ending piece, if you like. I mean, it starts from nothing and ends at nothing, and it goes through a lot of sort of maybe violence.
What about when
in the middle?
What about when it builds up in the middle, and then he screams?
It's not a huge message to the world, I think, you know. About murder or violence.
The songs, the lyrics, the songs.
The title of
your songs.
I mean, it's
totally.
We often pick titles, you know, which have nothing really to do with the songs, but just like our name.
There are ways of
it's
marking.
It's just the way of marking it and saying, you know, putting it into categories. We could call all our songs number 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. Except words are interesting.
Yeah.
And they create, you know, like Careful That Axe, it's a nice sort of image.
What are, like, some of the hassles, like, a rock group like yourself undergoes on tour and, you know, doing things?
Equipment hassles,
flying hassles, getting it, traces.
Boredom hassles.
Boredom when you're not working.
I mean, nothing too, you know, every now and then there's amazing disaster and everyone rushes back to freak down.
There's probably a new disaster that's happening. And Steve rushed in.
You try and, I mean, things tend to run a bit smoother than they used to. Because there's more money. I mean, one of the best ways of sorting out hassles of all time is to spend money. You know, like, if you can afford to... I mean, the real hassles come when you're 100 miles from the gig and your van's broken down and you've got $8, you know. Whereas if the gig you're going to do is worth enough money and you've got some money, and so you can rent another van and get an alternative flight, or, you know,
it's all money to people to get it together for you.
Right.
And buy moving cameras.
Buy moving cameras.
I don't know if I should ask, but, like, how much do you make, like, at a film or something like that?
I don't know what we make.
We don't know. We haven't been told.
We don't, if it's a...
Me or,
we could make money.
All we can say is that we lost money on the film.
You lost money?
Because in theory.
Because the choir and brass
musicians cost plenty. $5,000.
$5,000
at
the... most musicians? I mean, the whole group?
Yeah.
The whole lot cost
the choir and brass.
Really?
And rehearsing. And all that sort of stuff.
Like, how much would it...
Our expenses of living in New York for a week.
Plus, how about that? You lost at the end.
So, like, we lost at the end.
Did you have a great time, like...
Well, all the time, it helped
you sell records. You sell records, you know.
I mean, the whole economy of the thing is a bit more complicated than how much you get for a gig and when you make money or not. That's really what I'm saying.
Like, how much would a group like who comes here once every 10 years, like the Stones, like how they make plenty, don't they?
They do. But once,
especially when tickets are as high as $750, $850, and all that.
I mean, we could make money on live gigs, but it's not really.
I guess you're not out for money, which is, I guess,
well,
very.
We are out for money, really. I mean,
did you go into rock business to get rich? I don't think.
Oh, I'll start at the beginning, certainly. When we started in England 3 years ago, we all wanted to be pop stars.
Oh, you missed it?
I missed out all along.
Who's that?
Where was he all the
time? What happens in a time like this when one guy gets in on the fun, when you're not doing anything and the others are just interviewing people, you know, having a good one?
Well, I was trying to think, what state is he in?
What do you think of groupies? You get a lot, I guess.
Nice groupies?
Bad groupies, but on the whole, they're bad.
Really? How about on this tour this last week? Have you been pretty successful? Maybe you're married, I should say.
I haven't met a single groupie on this tour, and I don't intend to.
That's the best thing. I mean, it used to be a lot of fun, like now you get serious.
I guess the first time coming to America and all these groupies was a huge buzz. Because it was, in England it isn't like that.
England, the morals are different, right?
It was like 1967, or maybe 8. Like there was, well, I felt on the West Coast, the whole, and the groupie thing was good in many ways.
Right.
In those days, somehow I felt there was a lot of friendship and a lot of things going on between groups and groupies, etc., which was good. Whereas now it's completely different.
Yeah. Richard, do you have anything to ask yourself that would be of special interest to the article?
Oh, I said that to the album.
Anything I'd like you to ask us?
Ask yourself anything at all.
I haven't got anything to ask myself.
How am I feeling today?
I feel alright.
Have no more questions about
that? No, I have a couple. I gotta make this a long interview, or else it'll take up, you know, a second.
Shut it off now.
Nick, do you have anything to ask yourself?
Tell me, Nick. No, I have nothing to ask myself. Or nothing I wish to ask myself.
Okay.
This is England and France, all of you.